We're going to be covering a really great topic today. This is a big mouthful, but basically we're going to be talking about how Microsoft IT uses Microsoft SharePoint and Office 365 to provide a variety of services here at Microsoft. And we're going to be diving into that in a second, but I just want to do some introductions first. IT Showcase webinars are hosted monthly by our IT Showcase subject matter experts here from IT on a variety of topics that are the most widely requested topics that we find from our customers and IT pros around the world. And so we're really excited to see so many IT pros from around the globe today. And we really hope that you find this content valuable. So we will give you a chance to respond, ask questions, and give us some feedback about today's presentation. Okay. So who am I? Hello, I am Carrie Doring. And I'm actually from Microsoft IT from a group called Discovery Collaboration. And we have a really interesting and sort of non-traditional role here at Microsoft. We are involved in defining and working on how we can provide the modern employee experience. And that includes a vision of mobile first, cloud first, ways for our employees to be able to access the content they need anywhere from any device. And that's a really interesting challenge. We have a lot of employees that we work with. And so to deploy this vision takes a lot of hard work as well as a lot of really interesting thought processes. And so my background is that I've been at Microsoft for about 9 years, and I've actually done a lot of different interesting type of work. I came on doing a calendar application that allowed us to do aggregated views of different calendars from across the enterprise. And most IT pros are probably very familiar with that concept. It's something that's in Outlook. It's something that's in any of your traditional calendar applications right now. But we like to think that we sort of drove the original version of that about 7 years ago. And it drove a lot of those concepts into what you see today out in the enterprises. I also have worked in risk remediation, you know, identifying areas of great risk for Microsoft and closing vulnerabilities. And that's been another very interesting and far-reaching effort that maybe I'll end up talking about some other day. But what's very pertinent today is that over the last couple of years, I've been in the Discovery and Collaboration group, and I've been driving our governance of SharePoint process and application that allows us to actually have a lot more control over how we use SharePoint, as well as on-premise and online. And through those efforts, I got to meet David Johnson, who will be presenting most of the content today. And what you'll find, David Johnson probably knows more about SharePoint than anyone I have ever met. if you want to go to that next slide, I think we're ready for that one. David's been working in SharePoint for about 10 years, which for those of you who know SharePoint is probably the entire history of SharePoint. I think David's seen just about everything there is to see in the world of SharePoint. And so please be sure to ask all the questions you want. That's something that we'd like to do. We like to make these formats very open and friendly. So be sure to open your chat window if you have any questions for David. I'll be monitoring it. And we've got some other people around the table who are monitoring it. And I'll make sure to interrupt him when needed. Absolutely. To make sure your questions get answered. And we are also going to be stopping at the end and giving you some time for Q&A, so you can hold your questions till then. But I think it's nice to do this in a more interactive manner. So whatever works for you, go ahead and do it, and we'll accommodate that. So without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to David, and you can talk a little bit more about yourself if you'd like.
Great. And so as Carrie said, I'm David Johnson, and I've been with Microsoft about 16 years or so full-time, before that contractor, Microsoft another few years. So I've been around for a while, been doing SharePoint and KM systems. I was really doing knowledge management more broadly and how we help our field effectively get great content for roughly since 99, but really SharePoint since 2005. And I drove engineering for how Microsoft built our internal portals, everything from our corporate portal and our IT portal, and how we help drive our shared services story, enterprise search, and people profiles and all that stuff. And my role now is more focused on how we make sure that as a company we're integrated and we're tying all of our SharePoint pieces together for internal employee adoption, for those employee experiences, how we rethink ourselves getting to the cloud and what that's going to mean. And it's kind of an interesting and exciting time. You know, SharePoint's been a good ride in terms of working and driving good portals and employee experiences. And now we're kind of on this next wave, the next stage in terms of rethinking and driving our employees to mobility and so they can access anywhere on any device. And it's a good time to kind of work through all this. And this topic overall, though, is kind of a a high level, 100 level topic in many ways, or what is SharePoint at Microsoft, how do we do it? There's so many different branches of this we can go into. We can take the session in a couple different ways depending upon questions that come in as well. But the kind of a general way we were kind of thinking about doing this is first starting to talk about the landscape. What do we have? What have we had on premise? What do we have in cloud? How have we gotten to cloud? How have we gotten to cloud? You know, that's a pretty deep topic about migration and adoption of cloud more broadly. I'll touch on that. There's going to be a session at Ignite that we're going to do as well. It's going to be a little deeper on the cloud to talk about how we got there and our migration program. So I'll touch on that here, though, just to kind of preview that. I'll talk a little bit about how we help our businesses. A big part of it is not just providing the services of SharePoint and 365 to our employee base and collaboration. It's about how do we help our businesses get value out of a product and technology. And that's absolutely critical, because just deploying SharePoint and having it out there is one thing. Helping businesses and employees get value out of it and really are able to build their business solutions or portals or make sure our content can be discovered, that's a pretty big deal, and that's kind of a foundational for us. We consider it kind of our SharePoint studio, SharePoint Center of Excellence, just to make sure that we're doing the right thing for our customers. We'll also touch on governance and security. You know, it's a broad topic of how does Microsoft think through and manage our SharePoint space? Well, Carrie is going to talk about that at Ignite a little bit as well, too, and a little bit deeper, but we'll touch on that now. We'll also talk about hybrid. Just a little bit, though, but hybrid for us is about we're both on-prem and in the cloud. How do we do all that? So let me start, though, by talking about some of our core scenarios. That when we think about SharePoint and kind of workloads that we have, everything is revolving around the connected employee experience. We're trying to make sure that our employees are really successful in terms of finding information, getting access to content that's relevant to them, collaborating with each other, getting engaged with the community more broadly, hearing the executive messages that are available, and just plain being able to get their work done. Fundamentally, this is all powered by SharePoint, 365, Yammer, all the core technologies, but we kind of try to weave this together in terms of our collaboration story for the company more broadly. It's not just about SharePoint as you used to think about SharePoint. It's about the 365 platform more broadly. It's about the Office platform more broadly to provide those collaboration experiences, just kind of weave together. So let's talk about that a little bit and some of our services. First, obviously, like any IT organization, we're in the business of running Microsoft first and foremost, and we work with our infrastructure and product group partners to make sure that we host our appropriate SharePoint services, everything from our SharePoint on-prem services to how we work with 365, and we have our own internal tenancy on 365, just like any other enterprise customer would that uses 365, and we manage that, of course, and with our partners, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. We also have shared services, everything from enterprise search, the people profiles, enterprise taxonomy, schemas, how we help to provide that enterprise services and consistency. So as a company, our employees can find what they need to do their jobs fundamentally, and those services kind of bring that together for us. Plus, we have a whole engagement process. I mentioned a minute ago about the notion of what we call SharePoint Studio, but it's how we help the businesses think through and talk through their problems, how we do kind of architectural conversations and consulting. There's lots of ways to solve a problem between SharePoint and Azure and application development, where you use on-prem, where you go cloud, helping our businesses think that through, what are the right trade-offs to make. Just like if you think about it, you might bring in a consultant or services or a supplier who's going to help you think through, a SharePoint MVP who's going to help you think through the right way to build. That's what we do also internally for the company more broadly. And we have a whole program around how we do that. And if a business wants to either build it themselves, we'll make sure that they know the right thing to do. And if they want us to build it for them as IT centrally, we have a program where we can engage and help that business be successful in terms of building their solutions. But either way, we want to make sure that they're going to be successful in whatever it is they're going to build. I'll talk more about that in a minute, but let me start by kind of covering the SharePoint offerings on-prem. And there's a little bit of legacy here, too. We've had SharePoint on-prem, really the team services, even before I started moving into SharePoint, in SharePoint 2001, really, with the SharePoint team services. We moved to SharePoint 2003 and then SharePoint 2007, really with what we consider the kind of utility environment. And that's where this got real in many ways, where we really enabled our employees to broadly adopt SharePoint and have team collaboration, project collaboration, group sites effectively, so that I can go ahead and share my project specs or my plans or with my peers, and I can, you know, the whole document management capabilities of SharePoint. And additionally, really starting to build portals on SharePoint. we took our, for example, our biggest portals to SharePoint 2007. Some of them were on SharePoint 2003, in fact, but really hardcore using content management features of SharePoint in the 2007 wave, way before 2007 even came out. But even before I get there, the utility space was really where those employees can do what they need to do. And as we think about this, this is kind of a cornerstone. Our employees, it's all self-service. It was a kind of a shared farm, so we had thousands of site collections, roughly 60,000 just in our what we consider our regional SharePoint farms alone. But at the same time, because you've got that volume and that scale, we didn't allow the same level of deep customization that we would have on our kind of managed farms. It wasn't necessarily for managed portal. It was more for that team collaboration space. If you wanted to have a free portal, great, go ahead, put it up there, no problem. But you were limited in terms of customizations you could do. You could do whatever you wanted in SharePoint Designer, and you still can. But you couldn't deploy full trust code, for example, solutions on the farm. Nothing server side. We wouldn't let you do that for lots of reasons, including the fact that on a shared farm of that size and that scale, we simply couldn't have managed the number of volume of solutions that people wanted to do for right supportability levels. So we separately have had what we called our kind of managed custom portal space, where we enable our business customers, such as our HR portfolio or finance portfolio, to have dedicated environments for them to meet their needs, such as HR Web and finance and our finance portal, plus all their online and business applications built on SharePoint. And the distinction here is those individual businesses have, I guess, a higher level SLA effectively with IT. They have the ability to deploy custom solutions to themselves on their farm. They'll have to go through IT processes to do so, and we help them do the right thing on those places, but at least they're able to get a little deeper customization in play as they need to. But that's kind of how it's been on-prem. As we think about the cloud offering, first of all, as opposed to on-prem, where those two silos, everything was really on unique farms. Our on-prem utility was one farm. Our managed space was on several other farms, depending on what workload it was, if it was HR or finance. I'll talk about that in a minute. But for cloud, fundamentally, the platform is 365. That's where everything sits. Now, we layer on top of that what we consider our service offerings or our options on 365. Clearly, I have OneDrive for Business. That's a big deal for us internally, that we moved from SharePoint on-premise with roughly 8 terabytes of content on our former My sites to roughly 250 terabytes of content on our OneDrive for Business on the cloud now already. And so it's a big takeoff internally at Microsoft, big adoption, and the growth is just in flight now and growing rapidly. And that's just one of the services. The other way we think about, though, is the utility space. I can still go ahead as an employee and self-service create via our governance processes, a new team site, for example, or project site, or mini portal on 365. Go ahead, go do it. But if I want IT engagement, if I really want what we consider a kind of major portal, like our enterprise portal or a big knowledge management solution, well, you're going to engage IT about that. And we're going to help provide a kind of managed level of service in terms of we're going to enable you to kind of get a portal that you can have. You can also work with us to put applications on top of this thing. You'll get a higher level service contract with us. But we enable that kind of elevated, what we consider elevated service, kind of white glove service for those customers that need a little bit of care. And we have a process along the same lines of people submitting applications into us. Because today, I have an internal IT marketplace on 365. I have a public marketplace on 365. I can therefore go ahead and allow my businesses to build applications that are going to go in that IT marketplace. And we have a vetting process and how they get in there. If on the utility side, I can use any application I want that's in that marketplace. But if I'm in the custom side, I can also go ahead and create and ask and request a new application to go in that marketplace as well. So,
and I would love to make one point about this. Mm-hmm. What I find really interesting is when we look at the service offering on-premise versus what we're doing in the cloud, it's also allowing us as IT to really evolve ourselves and our skill set, because we were very operational when we were running on-premise. We had to run the servers. We had to run the services. We had a whole level of staffing just to keep everything up and operational. And now what we can see more with the O365 service offering is, since most, a lot of this service is being provided by the Microsoft product group, that we can really look at more of those consulting services and a lot more of the visionary work that our group gets to do, mm-hmm. moving into what is not considered traditional IT, but is really what we see as the evolution of the IT worker.
Exactly. Moving to a business enabler as opposed to an IT service run operations team. And so when our employees kind of get started, you know, like any IT organization, how do you help your employees find what they need? We have the service offerings whole set and set of services we make available and describe. When you click through, ultimately, this is just a screenshot. Then you click through as an employee and you say, hey, I want a new SharePoint site. Well, we give you a bunch of options for that. You can either create a OneDrive, you can either use OneDrive for Business and we tell you how to get that and use it. You can get your team site, create a new portal. You can go ahead and create a new developer site if you needed a developer site. So we basically have this kind of entry point into this, and we do this simply kind of provide kind of additional level of that service. That if I want a portal, I can find out how do I engage and talk to IT in more detail about getting a more managed environment. But if I simply want a team site, great, go ahead and provision one, and we'll get your data, we'll provision the site, and you're off and running on your own. So, but if you really want the services from IT, I mentioned a minute ago that we have what we consider a SharePoint Studio set of services, and it's kind of a consulting set of services that we offer internally. And we do this, and we kind of recommend that. Certainly a large enterprise, how you think about and how you service the company, you want that kind of consolidation in terms of at least that thought process to kind of lead your, help the customers think through how to best solve the problems, help your business customers internally, I mean, solve these business problems. Everything from helping them get best value out of a solution, how do you architect a solution appropriately to make sure that it's going to be well built, well designed, maybe on Azure, maybe it's a solution running there, maybe it's a solution running on 365, or maybe it does run on-prem, but at least helping design it so that it's forward-thinking, extensible, it's going to be supportable, both by the business as well as by IT. So we want to make sure that the right things are being done there. On top of that, we have kind of our layered scenarios and solutions that we offer that, first and foremost, we want to make sure that our businesses are getting value from an experience, that we're helping our employees shift from the kind of legacy, just web-based portals to experiences. And the portal, it's still a portal, it's still a web-based portal at one level, but we can also have now mobile applications that may be consuming from the same data. I now have you know, phone apps, for example, consuming from news that are coming from our enterprise portal, or I'll have other web experiences that are consuming from that data set and bringing it forward. But the point being that we help our customers kind of think through those processes, organize their information, build the portal, make sure content's discoverable, work with us if they need to do anything with our corporate taxonomy or schemas or do anything with search. We work with them on all those things to help make sure they're getting value out of their site. So
before you move on, there's actually a question.
Great.
What is the advantage of removing tie-down to machine? I understand it will eliminate sync issues, disk space constraints.
Tie-down to machine. Yeah. So one of those things is for us, OneDrive for Business, for example, is I can now, you think about Microsoft, we flatten devices all the time because, you know, you get a new, we want to make sure we're running newer builds of Windows, or I lose my device or something happens to that device. Well, great, nothing's on that device. I may be caching content at worst, but that content is really in the cloud. So I can move from machine to machine. This is not my machine in front of me. And yet, I can go ahead and open the content from the OneDrive for Business site in cloud. And so it enables our employees to be more portable, and that content is freed up. And so we historically, you know, we use a variety of technologies to manage the content and let people roam to a certain degree. But at this point now, we're kind of eliminating that. We're bringing it so it's available anywhere now.
Great.
Did you want to add to that?
I love the fact that I can work on my work-issued laptop. I do a lot of testing of new builds, and sometimes that means my laptop doesn't work optimally, and so I can go over and borrow someone else's and get as much work done. I can go home and use my personal machine. It really frees me from the restraints of a particular machine or having to be in a particular place to do my work.
Yeah. Exactly. And absolutely, if there are any more questions about why we have the service offerings we have and how we think about kind of those varieties, let us know, because we're happy to keep going in on that. But yeah, so as far as Studio is concerned, the end state is helping business get value out of our products, and it's not just about the SharePoint product. So part of this also was getting to cloud. And why did we go to cloud? Well, first of all, you could say, well, we're Microsoft, of course. We're selling a 365. You're, of course, going to go to cloud. Well, yes, there's part of it that's that we as Microsoft IT, our role, first and foremost, I should say, is to run the business of Microsoft. The business of Microsoft wants to make sure we're financially successful, we're reporting appropriately, we're able to have our HR data appropriately, our organizations, our engineering and product groups are able to build their product successfully. So first and foremost, we've got to make sure we run the business of Microsoft. So we can't negatively impact that. At the same time, we're of course trying to make sure that we're using our own technologies internally to prove the viability of them, to demonstrate the success of them before they go broad with customers. So part of it, of course, was, you know, we're going to go to cloud first. We're going to go to cloud at scale first because we want to validate, we want to prove, and we want to hit roadblocks before anyone else does. And we've definitely hit roadblocks. We've definitely gotten through them. We've definitely made some great progress in terms of getting to the cloud and a lot of success there. But really, we made that decision that part of going to cloud was going to be that let's dog food at high scale our 365 multi-tenancy service and get it up there. But, you know, a big part of it also, though, was just these other attributes here. Carrie talked about IT as a service earlier. That was a big fundamental shift that instead of simply running the service and patching boxes, moving up that stack, we would free ourselves up to have more time with those business conversations to make sure people are getting that value out of the product. That did shift a fair amount. The other thing that we just alluded to was that whole access anywhere on any device. That also shifted nicely. Now, there's, of course, generally concerns and questions about that. Well, I can access content now. What are my security implications? What are my governance implications? We deal with that. We think that through. That's a big concern of ours that we've had to work through. But that, from an employee benefit perspective, it's been significant. When you think about our employees being able to work remote, or I can access the PowerPoint I'm going to present to a customer when I'm on the bus traveling to that customer presentation. I can go ahead and manage my content from home if I need to. And I'm in a much better state in terms of doing so. And our adoption from our employees is huge. That historically our employees were, the content wasn't known. IT may have had or thought they had a handle on where the content sat, but it really wasn't. Now that our content is on 365 and a huge chunk of it now, our employees, we know where the content is now. We know where what's secured appropriately. We know what the issues are potentially. And that changes the dynamic. And so, but that all comes back to our employees are getting value out of a service. We also have this technical agility. The fact that we have moved from roughly 8 terabytes of my content on-prem to 250 terabytes on cloud, and our team content grew, you know, roughly from 30 terabytes on-prem to another 100 terabytes or so on cloud. Point being, we didn't have to deal with that as IT. I didn't have to buy disks. I didn't have to buy SQL servers. I didn't have to manage any of that. We subscribe to a service offering. We get the value out of the service offering. Our on-prem services, yes, if I needed to grow my WackWack SharePoint farm to that extent, that would have been a pretty significant IT investment to make that happen. I would have had to deal with a lot of more increased disaster recovery costs to make that happen. All the costs of just playing build out and running and patching, none of that's there for me now. But I also get the benefit of a service that 365 has been able to roll out capabilities where we've had a lot of value. And Carrie's done a lot of work for a product organization on new capabilities rolling out, everything from groups and we Delve and other capabilities which are rolling out to 365, which we get to take advantage of. Our employees get to get value from far earlier than if we were to wait to we could actually deploy. Even internally at Microsoft, deploying our on-prem farms can take time. And dealing with 365, I've got the advantage right off the bat. Did you want to add to that at all, the whole dog food space?
Yeah, and I was going to add, a lot of my role, and I alluded to that earlier, is what we call dog fooding at Microsoft. We don't really like that word very much, but what it is we are the first and best customer of Microsoft. We test everything out at scale. We help our product groups find a lot of those big gotchas or things that they may not have been able to look out for before it's rolled out to all of our customers. And what we can really give them is that enterprise worldview that, you guys are rolling this feature out, however have you thought about this, that, that, and that, and make these products a lot more enterprise ready. And so by the time they get out to you, they're really fantastic services. And that's an exciting part of the role that we play.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so let me talk about getting to cloud and what it meant from a kind of before and after picture. So before, I mentioned utility space. We had worldwide kind of SharePoint utility. We had SharePoint services in Europe and in Asia, as well as, of course, Redmond for North America and what we call America's footprint. And we had a fairly huge SharePoint footprint on-premise. We also had those custom portals. And every one of those boxes effectively was its own dedicated farm. A dedicated farm for our finance portfolio and a dedicated farm for the legal portfolio. And you did that because the customizations in place, you didn't want the finance customizations to step on the HR customizations. And unfortunately, with the old legacy SharePoint development model with 2007, you really had full trust solutions, meaning you took over the box. You had full control, full trust over that service. It meant that you had to, as IT, be that much more careful about managing that SharePoint footprint. It made upgrades a little more challenging to go deal with when it was a full trust solution directly on the box. And so we had separate farms for these things, not to mention the fact that SLAs meant it was nicer to simply say, hey, finance, and they're blackout window, and you can't deploy anything here, therefore HR has different blackout windows and manage them over there. We also had a big my site space, 114,000 my sites worldwide when we were roughly at our peak. Underneath all this, we had our shared services, everything from enterprise search, providing services to the whole company, to enterprise taxonomy services, the corporate schemas, and so on. Just again, so we make sure that everything, no matter whether you're on the utility space or on the custom space, had a consistent set of access to information, and what we had one sort of employee search experience. Now, going to the cloud changed things a fair amount for us.
I actually think this is a good time to ask another question that just came
up. Go ahead.
I mean, what you're about to talk about is what it looks like when we manage a hybrid environment of on-premise and in the cloud. So the question is, when going between that on-prem and cloud-based offerings, how seamless is it? Are there different logins required, or is it really seamless where one click and you can move between all the different properties without having to re-authenticate or knowing if you're on-prem or in the cloud?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one that initially for us took a little bit of work to get right, but we've always had single sign-on experience. As an employee, my account that I have for my corporate Active Directory on-prem is replicated into the cloud Active Directory, so that's backed by Office 365 backs or uses. So therefore, my credentials are exactly the same. Initially, when we went live with 365 in 2012, I, as an employee, the first time I'd have to hit, it was an internet site at that point, from an employee perspective, I'd have to therefore do authentication. Where we very quickly worked through how do we get single sign-on to work so that if I'm at least on for corporate network, I have single sign-on and automatically all passes through, and so that I don't have to re-authenticate going in. If I'm from home, of course I've got to, or another non-domain joined machine, of course I've got to authenticate to my 365 service, but it's all using exactly the same credentials as my on-prem Active Directory. Everything just kind of flows through. And I know Laura Hunter earlier did an IT Live talk about a month ago or so, which I know is available, on how Microsoft does our Active Directory footprint. And Laura had a lot more information around how we manage that and how we manage it in a cloud way or a hybrid way. So I know we've got more information on that as well.
So great. One more quick question. When a team site's being created through self-service, how do you make sure the new how do you make sure that on the new team site there's no duplicate team sites created and that it follows existing taxonomy? Do we have the checks in place, or do we consider that important?
Well, that's an interesting question, because it's actually an interesting challenge, and one that, Microsoft, I should say, is a very obviously large and to a certain degree decentralized company. You've got individual divisions kind of doing their thing. We have core services that provide it for everybody. So I'll say first and foremost, we do have a corporate taxonomy that kind of backs it all. That said, when someone creates a team site, if Carrie goes and creates an IT SharePoint site and I create an IT SharePoint site, as IT, I mean, we are going to have to deal with each other and rationalize. In fact, we've probably done things like this, that we have to have that conversation of now we collapse it back down to one, which one are you actually going to use? But that does happen, that we don't block our employees from creating a SharePoint site. If we expect the project team or the organization to manage and decide what their SharePoint site is going to be, we let them, if they need two or three, to manage their org and however they manage their project structure. That's to a certain degree up to them. We have guidance around what we expect. Like, for example, our belief internally is have more site collections rather than deep site collections. We would rather have multiple projects being their own individual site collection versus having a huge deep hierarchy with lots of complexity to manage and permission sets to manage for lots of reasons, but that's one of our kind of guidance. So I'd rather those businesses go ahead and feel free to create the site collections they want, and we do have lifecycle management in place so that if that site collection is created and it isn't used because Carrie and I created kind of similar site collections, we're going to know that, hey, the site collection is going to be expired at X date because it's not being used or it's hit its expiry date. Great, we'll get rid of it, for example.
And one thing I just want to touch on quickly is that within our divisions at Microsoft, some of them are concerned about this, and they want to make sure that when they're creating finance sites, that they're not making duplicates and they're not creating a confusing hierarchy. So there have been some customizations to address these issues about the taxonomy and making sure that there's only one site per tool, one site per process.
Yep.
And they do manage that, but again, in a customized process.
Yeah, and so, like, for example, one of the things we've done is a legal division, for example, has said, hey, when I create a legal site, I want some standards around the creation of that legal site. And so they do things like that. We have a general, our self-service creation footprint is wide open to a degree, but a division can therefore further refine and customize and kind of get the more specific variant that they're looking for Carrie's talking about. So a couple things have changed on this. First and foremost is that, well, I have to say, over 90% of our SharePoint sites are in the cloud. We were at 97%, in fact. We're in the cloud, and we were feeling really good about it. Then we went and acquired a large company, or at least a huge part of a large company called Nokia. So we have, you know, just like a lot of other companies, you do mergers and acquisitions. You've got to rationalize in someone else's footprint. So we're doing that now. So it changes our dynamic and footprint. We're still over 90% of our SharePoint footprint's in the cloud. But Nokia, for example, had an Office 365 dedicated subscription. So how do we rationalize that in with the rest of our mix into our multi-tenancy mix of what we think of cloud? But more broadly, our SharePoint footprint, our utility footprint, is roughly down to roughly 10% of what it was. And that's 10% mainly because of extranet, where we've got a whole partner collaboration solution in place. But most of our SharePoint footprint, the utility space, went down from roughly 60,000 sites down to less 2,000 sites now. So massive drop. Our custom portal space may seem high, but the biggest properties are now in the cloud. That our corporate portals in the cloud, our IT portals in the cloud, our HR portals about to be in the cloud. So a vast majority of that corporate space is now running on 365. Plus, of course, the OneDrive for business content is completely there. We don't have any of that on-prem anymore. So our cloud footprint is growing pretty significantly. Now, this brings some challenges. I now have multiple shared services. I have a shared services for on-prem, and I have shared services for cloud. So we have to figure out how we rationalize that, and I'll talk about that with hybrid a little bit later. We also, of course, because we acquired Nokia, and we have an Office 365 dedicated subscription, from them. We have their own set of shared services. And again, how do you rationalize and bring that into the mix? And those are all things we're working through.
So another interesting question, and this is a great question because it's just exactly the scenario of the cloud. In our current business, we need to make some manuals available to employees who are not on the company network. Mm-hmm. What are recommendations? We're considering using OneDrive, but some of these manuals need to be contributed to by multiple individuals. Recommendations.
Right, and we typically would say, like, for example, in our case, we have an IT portal that's on 365, and you can build portals on 365, and that portal and full knowledge management system, so all the capabilities of SharePoint on-prem that you have in terms of check-in, check-out, authoring, workflow, all the rest of it to manage a portal and content. And, you know, if you want that kind of one-to-many space where you have few authors and many readers, you can totally go ahead and create a new publishing portal on Office 365. You can, of course, go and create a team site as well if it's simply kind of loosely managed. But if it's a more formal thing, go create the provision, that portal site out there, turn on the publishing features that are available on 365, just like on SharePoint on-prem, and you can go ahead, therefore, and kind of get what you're looking for. There are differences in terms of building a portal out on cloud than on-prem, but fundamentally, the core publishing capability set in managing of simply saying, hey, I want to put my manuals out there, no problem. That's exactly what 365 is for as well. So that's up to you how you want to manage that, but that would be the recommendation, is go ahead and provision a publishing site on 365. So, okay.
So quick time check, we're at 8:35.
Great. So a lot of questions I often get also is, why do we make the choices we made about prem versus cloud and where? First, I'll say, we're trying to drive all of our group collaboration, all our team collaboration to cloud. We believe in most cases, in fact, almost all cases, there's very little reason to keep that on-prem. We might as well, if I've got a team, a group project, a portal even, if I'm trying to manage information from a company and push it down to our employees, that content should be in cloud. That content is therefore pushed so that employee can see on their phone if they need to find information from our corporate portal or HR portal and so on. Those are reasons why we're doing those things. Now, we do have some things on-prem. We kept regional on-prem, for example. As a large enterprise, a multinational, we, of course, have employees worldwide. Now, with 365, you choose where your tenancy should sit. So if I have if I am a company multinational based in Europe, I can totally have my 365 tenancy based in Europe. Or in our Microsoft's case, we have a 365 tenancy based in North America. Well, the only limitation to that today is that by having my 365 tenancy in North America, I may have some need for content to actually sit in region. And so we have regional SharePoint in place on premise for that point that if content, for example, may be export controlled and must be restricted to Europe, you know, we have former Nokia content that's in that space as we do a Microsoft mobility, that some of that content must remain in Europe because of various regulations that exist there. Great, we will have an on-premise footprint in Europe for that point. Now, of course, if you know, we jokingly say, well, if our whole footprint maybe was in Europe, we could be all there. We could probably have done that. But in our case, what we've done is now said our cloud footprint is in the U.S., but we do have some on-premise footprints in Europe to deal with some of the more regional things. We also have on-premise footprints for other purposes, like legacy BI. That the BI stack for cloud with Power BI is fairly rich. That said, it's not 100% scenario parity with what the legacy BI stack looked like on-prem in terms of SSRS reporting or some of the other capabilities. So absolutely, I as an employee can, or an IT, provide data out in the cloud and have my employees be able to discover data and use the reporting services from Power BI. But if I'm a finance, for example, and I've got a whole lot of reports based on that's sitting on the BI stack, I'm not going to force that finance organization to completely rebuild their entire BI portfolio and take it to cloud immediately. So we still host BI on-prem. We also host the more complex customizations that are still on-prem, mainly because it takes time to refactor. In almost all cases, in fact, I can't think of any, where the complex customization can't go to cloud, it's simply a matter of it takes time to do that refactoring because it's the cloud can take advantage of scenarios. In fact, I can do more scenarios in the cloud. But that said, it requires a little bit of rethink to get that done. So while that happens, we have that on-prem footprint. We also, as I mentioned earlier with Extranet, have our partner sharing solution still on-prem. In fact, we do this on both sides of the fence. We say, if I'm doing guest sharing and I'm sharing with someone, a partner that I know or a few partners that I know, and maybe I'm maybe in some other active AAD out there, or org ID or Microsoft account, and this is a live ID, great, I can share with that on my 365 tenancy. So we chose to turn on the ability for people to use external sharing on our tenancy, and on a case-by-case basis, people can turn it on their site collections if they choose, at which point they can do external sharing. But on-prem is where we still have our kind of what we consider our legacy extranet, where we have our own managed Active Directory, managed accounts, and workflow and process. So if we add our partners in there, we have that all in place. And so again, that's one of our kind of bigger last big on-prem footprints. But generally, the cloud is kind of where we're trying to drive a lot of our stuff. We're going to keep some things on-prem for a couple reasons. One, we want to continue to demonstrate and prove out on-prem and a hybrid story successfully. And two, there's just a few things that we internally still will keep there just because we believe it is probably the right thing. So go ahead.
We have another couple of questions. Here's an interesting one. In what way does it make any difference to users if users are using a corporate device, i.e. its domain join, versus using a personal device outside of the corporate domain in a cafe or at home?
Well, great question. So part of it is the multi-factor authentication story. If I'm on a personal device that's not trusted, not domain joined, the multi-factor authentication is going to kick in for 365. And in our case, we have something called phone factor, which we use to say it's going to actually, for example, if I sign in to 365 on my phone or my personal machine, the first time I sign in, I'm going to be prompted for that double multi-factor authentication, at which point I'm going to have to go through that whole process and get in. But so we do make sure that certainly on those non-trusted devices, we've got an extra layer of protection in place.
You're going to love these next few questions.
Okay.
Do you have an intranet that ties all portals together, or are HR web and legal web completely disjointed with their own taxonomy and look and feel?
That's a great question. So our intranet, we have a lot of portals internally at Microsoft. Our business divisions historically have kind of done their own thing. We've tried to bring it together on two fronts. One, we believe that corporate portals should be rationalized from a taxonomy perspective, from a corporate schema perspective. For example, if I'm publishing news on our corporate portal or I'm publishing news on my HR portal, I should use a consistent schema on both fronts. And therefore, if I'm an employee finding things, I should be able to find ways of aggregating, or search should be able to aggregate. Other things like training, for example, we have consistent schemas across our training surfaces. So when that content gets indexed by search, I can do things like refine by and find training, maybe by level or by content category or so on. So while we have different experiences on our corporate portals, we try to rationalize them on a couple ways. One, by the schemas, and two, by the UI, that while we allow our portals to kind of have their own look and feel to a degree, first of all, one, internally we're trying to rationalize that and kind of get a little more consistent than we have historically. And two, we're doing things like having our own IT design package, as we call it, that people start from to say, hey, I want to build a portal, I'm going to base it on an IT starting point, so it's not necessarily completely from scratch. So we try to get consistency that way. And as we go forward, we're going to do more and more in terms of focusing our business partners on the content versus the experience, because I want the experience to flow across devices, and I want to be able to build mobile apps on top of it, and therefore not worry as much about a completely uniquely branded portal experience. Of course, they're going to get the brand, they're going to get the showcase, they're going to get the colors, but we're trying to rationalize that a bunch too. Not to mention the fact that the great unifier on an internet is search, and the great unifier between prem and cloud is search.
Well, speaking of which, how do you maintain search experience between on-prem and cloud?
In fact, that's a great question. I'm going to get to that. That's one of the slides coming up in a few minutes.
Great. And so we have a lot of questions rolling in, and I know you have a lot of content. So what I'm going to recommend is maybe we get through the content and try and wrap up in about 10 minutes.
That's fine.
And then we'll get to a lot of these questions. Many of these questions will be answered by
your presentation. Yep, that's great. So I'm going to skip over this, but this is really high level, the cloud kind of pathway and growth that we – like I would expect most other companies, took our time to kind of dip our toe in, to figure things out, to kind of work our way through, determine our cloud policies, and then go to cloud. Now, I want to say one very important thing here, that in terms of going to cloud, a big part of it is adoption. A big part of it is driving that change. That you tell somebody, hey, go create your new team site in cloud, that team is successful, and other people go, but hey, they're using the cloud, or I've got multiple projects. This one's in the cloud, but this one's still on-prem. I'm working at home. I can't get this content the same way I could the other one. Why isn't this site over there too? And it starts to build network effects. So just by starting to driving broad cloud adoption, literally half of our SharePoint footprint disappeared on-prem in a year. Now, we have lifecycle management tools on-prem to manage that footprint. So yes, we can contain it, control it. But that said, our employees were adopting the cloud on a pretty significant way. So even before we did migration at any significant scale, our employees were already taking broad adoption advantage. And then, of course, we did migration. But I also want to note, we're never going to be done, or at least we're not going to be done for years, I should say, where we're going to have this long tail of portals that remain on-prem because they're things that either are highly complex, they're just going to take a lot of time to rebuild, or we're going to decide to keep them on-prem. So while our vast majority of the footprint will be on 365, we're not going to be ever fully there. I'll touch on this quickly because this is just kind of a cost thing. That the only thing I want to call out here is from a cost perspective, that it takes money to kind of grow and then eventually pull back again. That going to cloud, especially if you're going to do migrations, takes some funding to make happen. Initially, we simply said we're going to drive adoption. We're not going to really retire existing services. But part of our challenge is you can't retire farms on-prem until the last sites are gone. You may be able to resize down, but it takes time and effort to actually do that migration work. Now, over time, our on-prem footprint reduces. Our need is IT to manage on-prem changes. And so when we think about people costs in particular, it's not that we lose people. It's that we move people around. We move people from the operational side into helping our businesses get value. And so we still have our people. It's just we're changing up what we're doing things. What this slide doesn't show, by the way, is the licensing costs. We, of course, don't pay for licensing because we're internal at Microsoft. But that said, there's would have been the licensing cost. We calculated this out historically, the licensing cost to pay for SharePoint and SQL and Windows and all the rest of it on-prem versus the 365 licensing costs. And we've got a whole other view on what that is. But this is basically the added cost of what it costs to run the service and cost to manage from a people perspective. So when we think about migration, the first thing is, though, to say, what does it actually even mean to you? What are your business kind of goals and priorities as you think about this? And those are things we had to think about. What does it mean to provide support in the cloud? What does it mean to be hybrid in the cloud? And those are things we had to work through to kind of get to a sense that we were going to be comfortable in terms of managing our environment in the cloud. How do we provision sites? How do we govern sites in the cloud? These are things we wanted to work through and think about as we dipped our toe in the water and started to push out sites in there, especially OneDrive for Business out there. The other part of this is, as we think about migration more deeply, and we think about the kind of the bigger migrations that are happening, we kind of funnel them through, that we kind of filter out and say, some sites, maybe they can't go yet. Like the BI sites we talked about earlier, we're going to keep them on those on-prem farms and leave them there. And we're going to funnel out the rest of them. We're going to try to move to cloud versus the custom portal space. We're going to do a little more work to really trying to focus our portals through and try to get as many of them as possible. There's a little more complex operation. Now, I will say that the custom space where people are heavily customizing the environment, in our case internally, there are fewer of those, but that's a huge percentage part of the migration kind of implications versus the utility space where lots of them, less cost to move, less cost because people start fresh to go. Now, I'm not going to go too much into this whole migration story. We do have a session at Ignite, which will be available after that, but that session will go into a lot more detail around how Microsoft IT did manage and deliver and move our portals and content to the cloud, or big knowledge management systems to the cloud. So for more information, go to that session or watch our session after Ignite as well. So governance is an interesting topic for us, and Carrie talks a lot about this one too, that we have, first of all, had to think about, first and foremost, our goals. What did we want to do? And a lot of this was an interesting balance and trying to drive an up level of experience. First and foremost, we have to make sure that as IT, we're providing value for our employees. If our employees are walking away from our services and using something shadow or under their desk or somewhere else, IT isn't providing that value or, quite honestly, providing the security because our employees are bypassing anyways. So first and foremost, we need to make sure we're enabling our employees to get what they need and value out of what they need. But we also want to protect our company. We want to make sure our assets are protected and secured appropriately. And, you know, we do these things by a bunch of policies that we think about and think through. For example, we know we have multiple owners in every site collection so that I can enforce and know it. If somebody leaves the company, I've got somebody else to hold accountable. I do things like look for sites that are kind of top secret sites. We call them high business impact internally. That where if I have a top secret site internally and yet maybe I'm sharing it with everybody in the company, probably that's wrong. Maybe that site's either misclassified or overshared. We're going to look for things like that, for example, to make sure that we're kind of dealing with these policies. So a big part of governance for us was to think through what are our goals and how do we make sure we've got the right level of protection and also employee accountability in those goals and protections in place so that I have the right reporting services. I know what employees are doing. For example, one of the things we did is if an employee turns on external sharing on a site, well, they may have a perfectly valid reason to do that, but their manager's going to know that they did it because we want to make sure that boundary is clear that, hey, you just shared with someone outside the organization. Fair game, but at least log it, know it.
So I'm going to knock off one of the questions right now because it really goes with what we're talking about. How do we enforce governance on self-service team sites? We actually run a custom service that is an Azure application that provides lifecycle governance, that provides awareness, that provides reporting. I'm not going to go in a lot of details, but we should be able to follow up. We've done sessions on this. We did a big session at the SharePoint conference last year, so there's a Channel 9, a whole talk about that we can go into. And I have a feeling that we may come back and do a whole governance session here someday, so keep an eye out for that because we have a lot to talk about there. I'm going to mention we have 10 minutes left.
Okay.
I know there's a lot of other questions. Do we want to go really quickly through the rest of the
session? Yeah, I think I only have like two left.
Okay, so let's do that.
I'll just cover quickly the end and then we'll go on because I think some of the questions, for example, search, were coming up. So first of all, hybrid, I'm just going to touch on this really quickly. The hybrid thing, you know, and we mentioned the account thing earlier, so I'm not going to talk about hybrid accounts because we've one set of account management for our employee base and single sign-on across the board. Enterprise search was, of course, another thing. I'll talk about that in just a second, a little more detail. Underneath all that, we also have our employee services, for example. How do we manage and replicate enterprise taxonomy and people data? And those are things where the APIs are all there from 365 and SharePoint to go do that. There's nothing in product to automatically replicate. There are third-party tools that help with this, everything from Metavist, I know, has a tooling. I know SmartLogic has tooling to replicate taxonomy from prem to cloud, for example. We have our own tooling internally we built as IT just to kind of deal with that. But so that's how we deal with hybrid in some of these cases where we have either built tooling or bought tooling to manage how do we deal with this replication. And, of course, the core product itself does the basics of the fundamentals to make sure the account management is in sync. Let me talk about search for a minute because that's kind of a question around how do we weave things together. Enterprise search for us is kind of a foundation. If I click on the root of our tenancy, you know, microsoft.sharepoint.com, I get taken to this page, which is kind of our search entry point that, one, I Yes, I have my most recently used documents. I can see at the bottom what I would open most recently. In my case, a bunch of presentations I'm working on for various decks. I have the common searches that people are doing, the common things we want to promote. But I can then do a search and drive in from here. And I also then drive into that search experience. Now, we talked about the hybrid question. I'll say honestly, we fake hybrid a little bit today. Now, we make hybrid work in terms of we have one search experience that brings prem and cloud together in terms of from a UI perspective. I get my internet results. I can see, for example, if I did a search for SharePoint, I can find the various service offerings I have. I can also click on the on-prem tab to see what's available in on-prem services. Now, that actually takes me to the on-prem search, or I could federate it in that search from an experience perspective to show those on-prem results into this experience. In our case, we simply went ahead and said, and I click on-prem, I'm going to get taken to our internal, our on-prem WAC search service, which is show that result set. But at least we weave it together to make it look like a consistent set. I could also have done result blocks to kind of integrate in as well. A lot of the other parts of search are things like where I have other verticals, everything from training and video content and other more specific types of content that I want to kind of weave together in this experience. But for us, search is kind of a great aggregator, a great unifier. Now, and one of the nice things that I know was announced in the Office blog a month ago or so was the notion that what's coming in 2016 is the notion of hybrid search more deeply in the product. So our plan and goal is to merge effectively that on-prem tab and internet tab. So we would expect by the time 2016 is released as a product, we will have one internet search experience that those tabs will start to disappear, and we'll have that bring it all back together to one. So why don't we talk about additional questions then?
How much is lost or gained mobility-wise with SP 2013 on-prem versus cloud? So are we going to see a lot of mobile functionality on-premise with SP 2013?
So SharePoint 2013 has device channels to support mobility. I think SharePoint 2016, and more importantly, Office 365, has a lot of mobility built in, certainly Office 365. I can't talk to Office 2016 because I'm not sure how much of it is in product and how much of it we've announced as a company, but I can definitely talk about 365 from a mobility perspective. That on 365, we have kind of friendly mobility experiences that if I go to my OneDrive for Business site, for example, on 365, if I'm doing it on my phone, I get a touch-friendly experience that's iPhone, Windows Phone, Android optimized versus the full desktop experience, which is more optimized for the web UI. And so 365 itself natively knows what you're rendering against and will provide a beautiful mobile experience. Now, on the portal space, it takes a little more work because on the portal space, you've got to make some decisions around how are you optimizing that web UI for mobile rendering. And the more customized and deep the experience is, it's just like building a website at that point of, I want to make sure that I'm using responsive frameworks, for example. I want to make sure that I'm rendering beautifully on all these devices. So there's additional things to think about as you're building your portal. I'll talk about some of that also at Ignite in a little more detail around how we think about building portal, and there's going to be a lot of content there for that as well.
So here's an interesting one. When you're sharing content with an external user through O365, is that an additional license? And I can take that one.
Great.
There's a different licensing model for external users. It doesn't take a full license. And for each enterprise agreement, for each agreement level, licensing level, you get a certain amount of those external user licenses that don't hit your actual licensing model. Those external user licenses, they don't get access to everything in O365, though. It's limited what they can get to. And we could, there's a lot of information about that up on the Office site online, and we could probably dig up a reference to that and maybe send it out as a follow-up.
Yeah.
So someone will take a note on that one. Okay, moving forward. We talked about enforcing governance, and we're also going to follow up with a link to a session we did on governance so people can learn more about that. Can you elaborate more about access from devices I don't own, like I'm sitting at an internet cafe or at a library using a computer?
Yes. So, there's a few things about that. And one, there's the obvious question around how do I protect to make sure that people aren't leaving behind content, especially secure, deep secure content. One of the things and approaches we use internally and we advocate is RMS protection of a content. So we use rights protection services. So one of the things that SharePoint does and Office 365 does is you can turn on the library setting and say, I want to IRM protect content on download so that those Office documents, they are rights protected so people can't open them up if they are accidentally left behind, for example, on a device. Now, of course, clearly we want to make sure that people are being smart about it, which is one of the reasons why we do multi-factor authentication for the content, especially on less trusted devices. That's why we also do things like we do stamping to make sure people are aware of it. If the content is rather secure, we make sure that employee is aware if it's a secure content, treat it appropriately. We stamp a site, for example, with an HPI logo mm-hmm. to deal with that. So,
and I think yeah. the other thing that really comes in that David touched on before is that multi-factor authentication. The way that you authenticate with a non-corporate device is different because we do have to go through another level of security. When we're using a corporate device, we do have the physical protection of the TPM chip on there, and that lets us make a virtual smart card. So there is more security, and you do have to go to a little more effort to prove that you are who you are and you should have access to the content.
Right. In our case, we do a phone factor authentication yeah. where you're given a phone call and you've got to enter your PIN after you get the phone call just to kind of deal with extra factor.
Okay, so as part of the governance question, it was asked, do we use Record Center in legal or finance?
Yes, we do. So that is actually another interesting, we could do a whole session just about how we do retention management. But yeah, effectively our legal department does use Record Center. In fact, we've got multiple Record Centers internally at Microsoft to kind of manage this. So,
can you move it to the next slide?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
We're moving on. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Didn't even notice. But yeah, okay. So anyhow, point being that our record centers, we do have multiple of them. We do have kind of something we're working on, in fact, now, especially with Nokia integration, how are we doing additional retention policies more broadly on SharePoint sites? How are we rationalizing between two companies to get one orchestrated set of retention policies, for example? And yes, where we have record centers, we do have them in place for things like big contract management and so on. So yes, short answer.
And I think that actually goes into another question. Does current hybrid solution support e-discovery?
Yes, it does. And so now I will say there's for our legal team, there's two e-discovery centers. They've got the cloud e-discovery center, which provides access to our full 365 footprint, including Exchange, because it all gets brought in together there. Plus, we've got our on-prem e-discovery footprint. Both are backed by the search services. The distinction is because I've got an on-prem search, I've got an e-discovery center there and a cloud search, and so I've got an e-discovery there. So when legal wants to do that kind of management, they have two e-discovery centers to work with to kind of get that pull that content out or do that kind of place hold on content or any of their other things legal needs to do. And that is something that, in fact, we're continuing to innovate with. So,
next question. If planning for an on-prem to cloud migration, is it considered a best practice to isolate SSRS BISM to a single collection?
That's an interesting question, and I actually don't know the best answer to that one, so I'm not going to necessarily take that.
We'll follow up with an answer to that. We do want to acknowledge that we're at time. David and I are going to answer questions for another 5 minutes if you'd like to hang on. We do have a couple more in the queue here, so I'm going to read the next one.
Okay.
But before, I will like to mention here about the IT Showcase resources. If you want to learn more about other topics in the future, there's information on the slide about how to find out more about what we're going to be presenting, how to get that information, and please join us in the future. Also, to recommend topics to talk about, like if you're interested in that governance deep dive, let the team know, and maybe we can set that up next.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You're saying AD accounts are in AAD, which I don't think we meant to say. We did, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But where does authentication happen? If at AAD, non-federated, how would you say you do single sign-on from AD authenticated session?
I'm going to, especially given time constraint, I'm going to point to Laura's session about that one, because I think Laura touches on this topic a lot too. So I'll point back to that.
That would have done the same. Okay, we talked about hybrid e-discovery. We've got another one.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that's the end of the questions.
Great. And so I hope to see any of you who are coming to Ignite. I'll have a session with a couple of my colleagues there around a deeper conversation around getting the cloud and migration and portal migration and KM migration. So definitely hope to see you, any who are going to be there.
Great. And thanks again for joining us. It's been great presenting today. And feel free to reach out using any of these communication streams. So thank you. And... Oh.
We're good?
We're good.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Next slide. There's one more slide.
Oh, one more slide.
Thank you.
Didn't even.
Join IT Showcase webinars to learn how Microsoft does IT. There is the contact information that I kept referring to. So thank you for prompting us to go to the next slide. Feel free to grab that itshowcase@microsoft.com. This is a great place to ask questions and follow up in the future.
Great.
And next slide. We've got lots of slides.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's where I should have said thank you.